Hello, good morning. So I see lots of people out there using Surfaces. That's awesome. How do you like them? Is it good stuff? Yes? A little bit of, I'm still asleep. Okay. So there's coffee available, but don't go get it now because I'm going to talk and you're going to be entertained and you're going to like that. My name is Larry Guger. I'm a senior program manager with the Visual Studio team here at Microsoft. I work just over that away. And I get the special agent session. Isn't that awesome? 007? Yeah? We're still asleep. So what happens when you move into a new neighborhood, you buy $60 worth of candy and nobody turns up? Right? Well, what happens is Larry comes to a session with a bag full of candy. So I'll start with you because you said woo. Take the bag, pass it around. Don't take the whole bag. Take the bag, pass it around. I'd like the bag back, but it's not mandatory. So I'm going to get you all jacked up on sugar so you're all excited and you talk to me. Because I hate being up here and talking to you guys, and I feel kind of all alone if nobody talks back, right? So I entertain questions. I entertain, period. But I entertain questions throughout the talk, so feel free at any time. Ideally, you walk up to a microphone before you ask me the question, and my man at the back will see you standing at the microphone, and he'll turn it on. If that doesn't happen, I'm usually pretty good at repeating the question. If I fail to repeat the question and you weren't at the microphone, please say, hey, repeat the question, and I'll usually do that. I'm fairly accommodating. So it's a bit of an odd title that I'm glad you all turned up, because hopefully that means you might know what it's about, which would be good, because I'm not entirely sure I know what it's about. So the title is DevOps, Integrating Development and Operations for the Last Mile Velocity. See, our goal here is to put up titles that people kind of go, what the heck is that about? I'll go just to try and figure out what he's talking about. Maybe it's relevant. I won't be talking Azure. I won't be talking Windows 8. I won't be talking phone. This is primarily an enterprise on-prem kind of story. So who here does enterprise development? A bunch of you. Okay, good. So, you know, hopefully this will apply. And you can take some of this back with you. Use some of it when you get home. How many of you are involved with the actual operations side of your organization? Fewer, but still some of you. Okay. So since I'm coming from the Visual Studio team, my expertise lies more in the dev than the op side of things, but I'm going to spend a reasonable amount of my demo time in System Center. And we'll show you a lot of the things that we're doing to try and reduce that whole DevOps cycle impact thing. So there's my agenda: DevOps, impediments to problem resolution, demo, solutions to problem resolution. And this is, I think, slide five, or slide one out of a total of five content slides. So I don't like slides. I don't like talking to slides. I like doing demos. The problem with demos is I then get stuck back there and I don't get to interact with you guys as much. But people seem to like that. So DevOps in a nutshell. So I'm going to start off with some ramblings about what we think DevOps means. Hopefully it resonates with you, but this is going to sort of frame my talk and the presentation and a lot of the direction that we're heading with some of the tooling. Now, DevOps is not a role. It's not the perspective we're taking. It's more of an attitude. It's like Agile, right? Agile is not a tool. Agile is not a role. Agile is an approach. It's a methodology. DevOps, same thing. It's an approach. It's a methodology to how you work. And it really is all about that full life cycle investment. I build, I test, I deploy. I got bugs. I know you guys don't. Sometimes I do. I got bugs. I need to fix those. I need to get the fix back out, right? So it's all about doing that whole circle. One of the other aspects that you'll see starting to come out from us later, and I'm not going to talk about it other than this one sentence, is understanding how your users are actually using the application, some more analytics. And you'll hear more from Microsoft as we move forward throughout the year. So really, it's all about the full life cycle. And it really is about the whole team. Something that you'll hear as well along with the DevOps is NoOps. And NoOps doesn't mean that there's no operations, because you still have servers, you still need to put apps on them, you still need to get them out to your customers. But typically when people say, we're running a NoOps, that means they don't have a dedicated operations team. And this is becoming much more possible when you start to look at things like Azure, and all of these cloud services, where you don't need an on-prem server farm. You're not running your own data center. Let that fall to us, right? And we'll take care of all of that pain points. So then you don't need the guys that actually handle the machines, but you still need the people that manage the applications that run on those boxes. How do I configure my IIS? How do I configure a lot of those sorts of things? How do I set up my OS to properly run the application? It's still an operation, if you will. But there may not be a dedicated guy that's all he does, right? They become part of the development team. Now, you may have a guy that's all he does, but the movement is all about bringing them together to be part of the development team. Just like with Agile, one of the things they really tried to do very early was, let's bring the customer in as well, right? Because it's not just about the developers pounding out code. To get the customers involved so that the developer's building the right thing. This is also about getting the right thing out there, making sure that it's surviving the environment that you put it into as customers start to pound on it. So it's embracing more people, right? So it's sort of taking Agile. I like to really think about is just a natural extension of Agile. Right. It's just bringing the rest of the people into the picture. So DevOps enables software development practices. And really, it's all about, before I start to write my code, I need to have an understanding of where I'm going to be hosting this application. What's it going to run on? What's the environment like? What's the OS? What's the version of IIS? What's the version of .NET? What's my database that I'm interacting with? Right? Am I going to use REST? Am I using WCF? Do I still have some ASMX web services that I'm talking to? And how are those getting hosted? Right? Because everybody knows you built your application. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's your child. Right? You pet it lovingly. You give it candy. Where'd the candy get to? Is it moving around? All right. Still moving. Right? There's guys over here that need candy. So once you've built this loving thing and you fed it candy and you go and you put it into operations, it doesn't work. Right, the firewall's not configured right. Oh, I got the different version of IIS out in production than I was developing against. Blah, 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 blah. Right? So really what we want to do is we want to get as much of that automated as much as we can. We want to involve the ops guys as we're developing. So, hey, I'm building this app. I'm putting it on IIS. Oh, what kind of authentication scheme are you using? Oh, I never thought about that. Right? So these are the things that the ops guys will bring to the table. So DevOps accelerates the last mile of continuous delivery. And the things that we're going to show in the demo today is really focused on that, right? How can operations become much more integrated and involved and a part of the development and the application lifecycle? When a bug is encountered, how do I resolve that faster than I could before? I fixed it. Now I need to push it back out into production. How can I do that in a much more trustworthy, repeatable manner? You may have heard the term infrastructure as code, right? That's really starting to get popular now. I want to define how my environment is defined in code, using whatever code that happens to be, whether it's PowerShell or some kind of XML structure that says, this is how my server should look. This is how my IIS should be configured. These are how my firewall ports need to be aligned to the way I'm going to communicate across those channels. And all of that now becomes part of your application. It's checked into your source control. And you can leverage that to push out when you deploy your application. So as long as the environment matches how you've defined it in your code, your application will deploy. If your environment fails the tests of here's how I have defined it, then your application won't get deployed. And we can sort of stop the pain a little bit earlier because we're going to make sure that your environment matches. Now, with all of this DevOps thing, there's lots of learning that needs to happen. We're still learning how people are using it out in the wild. I'm sure there's still lots of people trying to figure out how they can leverage better in their organization. And one of the things, and I've got a slide for this later on, but I want to mention it now because I tend to not get back to my slides, is we're very interested in anybody that is doing DevOps, that is looking at DevOps, that is interested in DevOps, to participate in studies that we're running. And I've got a fellow over here, Carl. Carl, wave. He's a charming fellow. He said he wasn't going to wear the red dress, though, because it doesn't work well with his legs. He wouldn't be my Bond girl. I was sad. But Carl is one of our usability folks, and he's taking people, signing them up for studies that he runs. So end of the session, go talk to Carl. Hopefully I'll get to my slide where I've also got the URL where you can sign up online as well. But he's very interested in talking to anybody that's doing this sort of thing. Okay. So this is slide 3 of content. I promise there's only one more slide of content after this. So this is what we think of when we talk about the application lifecycle when it comes to deploying and monitoring and running these apps. So there's the monitor and the fix stage. So I've sort of taken development, and I've got a brand new app that I'm going to push out there, sort of out of the picture, and I've moved to the next step of the care and feeding of these guys, right? So some of the challenges, it might be a little bit small of a font, I apologize for that. Isolated operations tools and workflows, right? So the ops guys use their own tools. Dev guys know nothing about those tools. What the heck are those things? I don't know how they work, right? The ops guys don't know how Visual Studio works. That's to be expected. But there's these isolated workflows as well, right? And what I'll show you today is how we are taking steps to integrate System Center, which is your ops tool, and Visual Studio, your development tool. And we're using TFS as the connector there. And you may have seen some of that in the past. But really, it's about breaking down the silos. How do I get the data and the information that my ops guys have that my developers need to solve the problem? So let's make that easier and faster. One of the other problems, a user detects a defect in production. Now, I've got a very specific definition that I'm using behind this, and that is those types of problems that aren't going to raise exceptions, because you're watching your exceptions, you're tracking the exceptions. System Center does a fabulous job of doing that for you and letting you know. What about those types of problems where nothing actually failed in your code, but the app didn't work as they were expecting? I went to checkout and it said, oh, you know, couldn't resolve your credit card or something like that. And then you get to the checkout page. Well, did it take my credit card or not? I'm not sure. I didn't get an error page. It said I had a problem here, but I still got to the checkout. It's those logic issues that some people sometimes inadvertently code into their apps. But they don't show up in your monitoring solution. So how do we work at trying to find those bugs that are more of a logic issue and resolving those much faster? Because those are the harder ones. Production instance, hard to debug, right? Doesn't repro in my environment. We've heard that a million times, right? Whether it's test or production or stage or wherever. We'll show how IntelliTrace can really help you out there and how IntelliTrace connects with System Center to help get that data back to the developers quickly. No actionable feedback. Again, this is very similar to the previous one that I was talking about. I probably should have just merged those two, right? I got the error screen. It said, try again or contact your admin. So I'm contacting your admin. Well, what am I going to do with that as a developer, right? Not much. So we'll look at how we can get some real actionable data coming out of System Center. And of course, you're unable to repro that in your environment. Works fine in my box, works fine in test, works fine in stage, but it fails in production. And of course, you can't attach the debugger to production. And then the last bit of this is there's a long deployment cycle times. Why is there a long deployment cycle time? Well, probably because the ops guys don't trust the developers, right? The ops guy's job is to keep the site running. How do I keep the site running? Don't take any changes, right? Keep it the same, right? What's wrong with VB6? It worked. Nothing, huh? More sugar. Okay. So what we'll show you is how we can really get that deployment faster and repeatable. And that's the key thing, right, is make it repeatable. If it works exactly the same every single time, then you can trust it. All right, and that's my last little bit. So now it's demo. Now I'm stuck back here. It makes me sad. Okay. And of course, my machine locked. Okay, so I'm running a virtual machine here that is, it's that classic one box demo, because setting up all of the virtual machines to actually replicate a real environment is really hard. And my box isn't big enough to do that. So I've got System Center running here. I've got some product called Orchestrator. Hopefully some of you are familiar with that, running down here. I'll get to that a little bit later. It's going to handle my deployment for me. And I've got Visual Studio running here. This is the RTM version of Visual Studio along with the, I believe it's the CTP3 of the Visual Studio Update 1 applied. Right, so the Update 1 is coming out soon. I hope everybody's aware that Visual Studio, we've moved to a quarterly release cadence, right? So we're shipping quarterly all the time. So we're pushing out new stuff really fast, which means if there's something that you would like to see, there's a good chance we can get it in a whole lot sooner. And if there's anything particularly about IntelliTrace that you would like to see in the product, tell me, right? We've got opportunity to get that in way sooner than 2 years from now. I also have some folks from System Center hanging out here, so any feedback on that too, we'd love to get that information from you. Okay, so if you've seen any demos on Visual Studio 2012, over the past launch cycle and everything, you've probably seen the Fabricam Fiber application. And I'm going to use that as my demo machine. I've made a few tweaks to make the code a little bit more interesting. My VM is still spinning up a little bit here, so you'll see this might take a bit of time to come up. So here's my application, right? I recently pushed out a new version of it because my customers had some asks, made some tweaks. I've incorporated the feedback using my backlog and my Scrum process, and I'm pushing these things out rapidly. And my customers now have the new version, and they're looking at it, and they're going, yeah, okay, this is good. You know, I wasn't able to modify the tickets before. I can now do that. That's wonderful. But what I need to do right now is I need to go in and make some changes to the customer. So I heard Maria, she changed address, so I'm going to go and edit her address, right? So, I must have clicked the wrong person there, right? Maria Cameron, she doesn't live on Microsoft Way anymore. Antonio. Okay, well, that's a problem. All right, well, let's forget that right now. I got to go and look at some of the reports here. Well, this worked last time, right? Has anybody heard that, right? Well, that worked before you updated it and you broke me. Thanks. More sugar? Anybody? Is there any candy left? Right. Okay. So we've got two issues with my application, right? I just deployed a new version, and I've broken the reports, thank you very much, and I'm getting the wrong customers. All right. Well, I'm not very happy. I'm going to go and I'm going to get some coffee and maybe some Halloween candy. Meanwhile, my operations guy, let me just do a refresh here. Oh, you know what I want to do? I'm going to add a couple of columns onto the view. I'm just going to personalize my view. Who here uses System Center today? Anybody? A couple of you? Okay. So you probably know this app a whole lot better than I do. Like I said, I'm a VS guy. So last modified, and we want to add the repeat count. So basically, how many times have we encountered these problems? And I'm just going to refresh. So this alert comes in when I hit an exception, right? So System Center is monitoring my application, and one of the things that it does is it will record every time an exception occurs within my application. Now, what you saw is, as a good developer, I'm not showing the yellow screen of death, because that's just stupid. What I've done is I've hooked into the global exception handler in my global ASAX, and I put up a nice little error message, right, that says, hey, oops, sorry, we're broken. You know, try again a little bit later, contact your admin if this persists. The usual sort of thing that we saw in the reports screen, right, the gray box. So even though I've caught that exception and I've wrapped it in that nice generic error message screen, System Center will still track those exceptions so that we know that they occurred. So we know that the user had a problem. There's an error within our application. So I can take a look at this. And as an operations guy, I get these alerts. There's something going on. It could be, you know, a server down. I could be having a memory issue. I could be having CPU issues, right? Those are things that as an ops guy, I can recycle an app pool. I can make sure the server's up. I can do whatever I need to do to resolve a certain class of problems. When I look at the details behind this one, right, I'm looking that the application had a failure and an exception of type null reference exception occurred, right? Well, that's not my problem, right? That's the developer's problem. So one of the things that we can do is we can then set the alert status to assign to engineering. When I do that, what System Center does is leverages the TFS connector management pack that we provided. It will go off and it will create a work item in TFS, and it's going to provide some diagnostics data to go along with this bug. We want to make this actionable for the developer. So I've got that. If I go into Visual Studio, and I'm just going to refresh my all ops issues, you can see that I've got a couple listed here. We're just going to look at the first one to begin with. So this is the one that came over from System Center when I assigned that alert to engineering. And you'll see it's got the message, the same message that we were seeing in Operations Manager, so the alert error. We've got some more data here. And you'll see we've got an IntelliTrace log attached to this work item. Who's heard of IntelliTrace? Ooh, awesome. Love you guys. So I'm the PM for IntelliTrace, so you're my friends. This is good. And you'll have warm and fuzzy things to say about IntelliTrace, right? Okay. What you'll see is we've included IntelliTrace onto this work item. Now, the interesting thing is this came straight out of System Center Operations Manager running as is. I didn't have to do anything special to include IntelliTrace here. This is one of those integration points that we're providing, right? This is what's going to make actionable data come back to the developer much faster. You're going to see this in Service Pack 1 for System Center, and that's going to be coming out in a little while, not too far away. So what I can do now is I can go and I can take a look at this IntelliTrace file. And you'll see one of the things that we're telling you right away, that this was generated from System Center. So if there's not enough data contained here, you may want to enable full IntelliTrace, right? So that's like your tool that Q gave you, right? I'm trying to say with that whole 007 metaphor, whether it works or not. So it's a very small IntelliTrace file, right? Because it's just taken from what System Center captured. So it's very concise, but it's still very rich data. And you'll see that I can do a lot with just this one exception. So I've got one exception here. I can look at the call stack. Maybe that's enough, right? So I can see exactly where that landed. I can see how I got to that point. If not, I can start debugging. Now, let me just... So I've got my app open. Let me just... I want to stop debugging here, and I'm going to close this for a moment, and I want to show you a little something, right? So I'm going to close my solution, right? So I don't have a solution open here. I'm going to go back to my IntelliTrace file. No, I must have closed it, so let me just open that again. And I click on my exception, and I start debugging. And you'll see I got to code, right? Solution was closed. One of the things that IntelliTrace does in conjunction with the debugger, and particularly if you're using TFS as well, and your build has symbol server enabled and source indexing enabled, there's enough information in your binaries, your DLLs, to get pushed onto the server to allow us to hook back into the symbols that were produced for that particular build. And from those symbols, we can retrieve the matching version of the source file that was used to compile into that assembly. Doesn't matter if you've changed that source file in between. You're working on the next version, you've made some changes, you've checked it in. As long as I have the symbols that match my deploy binary, and they have to match, they will tell me what change set was used out of TFS. And then I can go back and I can load up the version of the source file that matches. Yeah, question here.
Is that
OK, so the question is, can I repeat what the heck you need to have in place? I'll do one better, and I'll actually show you my build definition that has all of that configured correctly. OK, so magic happens, right? Suddenly, my code file opens up, and I didn't have a solution open. We kind of hope this is goodness. So what I can see here is this is where my null reference was thrown. I can see on my call stack, it was just part of this get customer summary method call. And I can look at this and I go, well, you know, I'm passing in an employee summary object and I'm getting their current customer. Duh, I never thought that employee may not have a current customer at this point in time. All of my test data always had a customer assigned to an employee because that's my nice little test scenario, right? But maybe this guy just finished a customer. He's in between, he's off for lunch, and he doesn't have a customer. So I'm not checking for a null case. So I'll go and I'll fix that in a minute. So that's all fine and good. And I will come back to the build definition, I promise. So the other thing that we ran into was the problem with the customer, right? I clicked on a customer and it loaded the wrong one. And System Center isn't giving me an alert about that because there was no exception. Right? There's something wrong in my code. It works on my machine. It works in my staging environment. But for some reason, this isn't working in production. So what I can do is this is where I'm going to want the full fidelity IntelliTrace enabled. So in System Center here, I can go and take a look at all of the applications that are currently being monitored. And this is my Fabricam Fiber app. And what I want to do is way over here, let's just make some of these a little bit smaller. I now have this IntelliTrace tasks section, right? So this is another management pack that will be shipping with Service Pack 1. And I can select my application, and I can say, start IntelliTrace. I thought I clicked the wrong button. Start IntelliTrace collection. And you can see I've got a few options to configure it. I can have it automatically stop. I can collect a snapshot when I say stop. I'm just going to go with the defaults. And the default here is to use the trace collection plan. If you've looked at our downloadable standalone collector that we shipped with Visual Studio 2012, this is the same collection plan that ships with that. So it's exactly the same. You can download that. Just do a Bing search for IntelliTrace standalone collector, and it'll get you to the download page. So I've started IntelliTrace, and now what I can do is I can go back to my application and reproduce the problem. Now, one of the things when you're doing this is this requires a recycle of your application pool. Now, it's a recycle, not a restart. So if you had requests coming into your server that were in progress while you did this, the in-flight requests would still continue and would still return to the customer while we recycle the app pool and rejit all of the assembly so that we can get the IntelliTrace bits in place. You don't have to modify your code to do any of this. So my app is up. I go to my customers. I'm going to select Maria again, click on Edit. Yeah, I'm getting Antonio. OK, well, let's try Dan here. Let's edit Dan. Dan, I'm getting Johnson. OK, so I've reproduced the problem. I can go back to System Center. I can say, collect an IntelliTrace snapshot. And what that's going to do is it's going to go out and it's going to take a snap of the log that was being collected when I reproduce that problem. And I can do this as many times as I want, right? So I can collect many snapshots at different points while IntelliTrace is running. So I've collected my snapshot. I'm going to stop IntelliTrace collection so that my monitoring will continue using System Center. So we'll just let that finish up. OK, so that's done. If we go and take a look at my active alerts, you'll see a new alert attachment was received. And we can take a look at this. And I've done this already because there's a bit of a lag while things get collected and surface in System Center. So this is the one that I did a little earlier, and I assigned it to engineering exactly the same thing. There's the new one that just came in. And just so you can see, right, set resolution state, assigned engineering. That's what creates the TFS work item. Now, since IntelliTrace can have fairly large log files, and our default is to cap it at, I believe, 100 meg, and you can configure that to create a larger log if you need a longer period of time or more data collected. Our default is 100 meg. We don't want to do that as an attachment to TFS, right? So what we're doing is we're linking to the drop location. So let's come back to Team Explorer, my all ops issues, and you can see my new one has turned up. I'll use the one that I configured a little earlier. And if I go and look at the links, there's my link to my full IntelliTrace log. So I'm just going to open that one up and start debugging. So you can see this has more information, right? So the way System Center was working with the previous IntelliTrace log is there was an exception. It captured a whole bunch of really rich data about it, and it brought that back. With IntelliTrace, we're basically doing very similar, except we're collecting rich data over a longer period of time, as opposed to just an exception. And here's the data related to the exception. Here's data related to what occurred in your application as somebody else was running it somewhere else. So this is all data captured from my production environment. And we can see, you know, there's a bunch of exceptions. Runtime binder stuff. Okay, well, this is just MVC. I didn't quite line up stuff. This isn't interesting. Culture not found. Yeah, I don't care, right? These things aren't going to be related to the problem that my customer was encountering. So I can go and I can take it and, you know, with any of these, you can look at the call stack, right? What I'm going to do is I'm going to take a look at my web requests. What we do is we capture every request into the server made by the user while IntelliTrace is running. Quite often, when you're going to get an error report against something like what we saw here, they're going to say, well, I hit such and such a page. I clicked on something. I did something. So the URL is usually your entry point. And what we've done is we've done an aggregation mechanism on top of web requests. So every request that comes into the server, we're going to record everything that goes on, all of the method calls that get captured, all of the IntelliTrace events that occurred, and we're going to roll those up underneath a web request so you can look at them and kind of here's what happened as that person made that request. So I want to take a look at this one because it was that edit where something seemed to go wrong, and I can look at the request details. So here's all the stuff that occurred as part of that request. And I can see things like client IP, what session it was a get, what browser were they using, the URL, the status that returned. It's a bunch of stuff that you would typically get from an IIS log. So with this, you don't need to go and get your IIS logs anymore. We should be including that information here for you. Now, there's a bunch of things going on here. So I just want to sort of clean this up so it's a little easier for me to understand. I don't care about this. So we will capture requests for things like CSS and JavaScript files and JPEGs and all of that. So you may not be interested in that, so we can clear those out. I've already determined that these exceptions weren't relevant, and there's a bunch of XML files get loaded, all of your config files and all of that. So let's just turn off some of that so that it's a little bit more digestible. And I want to start debugging on this last ADO.NET request, because chances are, I'm guessing, since I built the app, maybe the problem is closest to where this last database call was made. So I'm just going to start debugging. And what you'll see, the same thing happens, right? I dynamically loaded the code for you, right? The solution is still not open. Now, because we're recording in using that trace collection plan from IntelliTrace, we're capturing data about method calls and the parameters passed into the method calls and the data relevant to those method calls. These little icons here are the methods that were called during this recording. So we overlay some IntelliTrace data into your code file. So I can tell, and you can see it, this is where I broke, that this method was also called as well. So let's actually just jump up to that one. And I've got this load from cache. And the ID was 1, and it returned a customer. And you'll see the data that we collect, we push down into the locals window. So let's just take a look at the locals window. And I can drill into this, and I can look at the return value. So the ID passed in was 1. The ID of the customer that was returned was 2. Okay. What the heck was I doing there? So let's just sort of drill into that code. And this becomes a lot like the debugger. Now, one of the challenges that we often have with IntelliTrace is it's so like the debugger, you expect full debugger fidelity. Keep in mind, this is data that was recorded at another time on a different box. I don't have access to memory, so I don't know what those objects really looked like in memory. This is all static data that you're looking at, but we can replay what happened. So the fidelity isn't quite what you expect if you actually attach a debugger, but it's still fairly rich. So I can go through a bunch of this, and I can step down, and if we have no data, your locals window will be empty. So we can keep going through and looking at some of this, and you can see how the data shows up as you start to traverse through all of this. And what you'll see now is I'm clicking the button, but my cursor isn't moving in my code. But if you keep an eye on the locals window, you can see how we're capturing a bunch of different data. So IntelliTrace collects method call information. And that's all we collect. When a method is called, we'll collect some data about the parameters passed into the method. We'll collect some data about the parameters returned from the method. Something to keep in mind is when you use automatic properties in your code, those get translated into methods. So we're instrumenting IL, not C sharp. So anytime you access a property, we interpret that as a method. So if you set a property, we're going to capture the value of what was set. If you return a property, we're going to capture the value that was returned, because to us it's just a method. So you can see here when customer.lastname was called, the value returned was Cameron. So I can go through this and I can look and see what happened, and well, there's my problem. Whoops. Yeah, don't do that. There's my problem is I'm loading up from the database all of my customers. I'm sticking them into an array, and then I'm indexing into the array using the ID. Okay, well, yeah, those shouldn't match. Just so happened my test data, my first customer had an ID of 0, and it always returned the right customer, right? Well, my production data doesn't quite match up. So there's my problem. I've identified it, and I can fix it. And you can see I've already coded up the fix. So let's just stop this, and I'm going to load up my solution. So I'm going to load my Fabricam call center solution, and I'm going to fix my bugs. And I can just close some of these windows. Okay. So my customer's controller, instead of indexing into the collection using the ID, what I really need to do is, let's uncomment everything here. Just write a little link query, right, to actually query into that collection, find the matching ID, and then return that customer. So there's my fix for that. And for my other issue, that was in my employees, my reports view model, I believe. Right, so this is where I had that null reference exception because I wasn't checking to see if customer was null. So let's just put up a fix real quick here. And I want to go customer equals null. And I'll take my summary object and the employee, and I want their full name. Okay, so that's going to make a little nicer message, and then I'll do an else down here. And we'll take what I output if I do indeed find a customer, sign that to the message, and I'll return my message. Okay. So that all seems like it should fix my problems. I'm a good developer, so I'm going to run my unit tests, make sure those all pass correctly. My unit tests pass. My, great coverage with a whopping 4 unit tests. Nonetheless, so my tests pass. I'm now ready to check in. And I've got my build set up in Team Foundation Server. So let's just go and take a look at my builds. And I've called this a gated. I'm actually not going to run a gated just because it takes a little bit more time to run through that. Hopefully you've all seen that. This is not a, you know, TFS build demo. So let's just take a look a little bit of what we've defined here so that you can understand how some of that magic works, right? So this is to actually get around to finally answering your question. So when I define a build and you take a look at the process section here, you'll find that there's a couple of things that are set by default and a couple of things that are not. And this is where you need the magic so that when I double-click on that IntelliTrace event, I get the code loaded up automatically. It's all down here, source and symbol server settings. By default, you're not going to have a path to publish the symbols, simply because we don't know what path you want to publish the symbols to. This is your symbol server. So whenever a build occurs within TFS and that value is configured, the symbols from that build are going to be published out there. And we're going to hang on to those. And we'll look at how we can retain a bunch of this information as part of the build output. The other thing that's important is the index sources. And this needs to be set to true. And by default, it is. So once I've got my symbols published and Visual Studio is configured to look in that location, I'll show you where to set that in a second, and my source is indexed, the magic will happen. And what the source indexing does is, as part of the build, it tells me what version of the source file was used as part of the build. So that's how I know how to get back to the right version. My binaries, my DLLs, contain information about my symbols. My symbols contain information about my source, right? So that's the trip. You don't need symbols on your production box. I only need them when I'm debugging. You can use a release build, so you don't need to use a debug build as long as you're generating your symbols, right? Symbols are key. The other thing that I had to do in Visual Studio is under options, I want to go to my debugger and the symbol setting. So I've configured Visual Studio to go and look in my symbol store. So when we load up an IntelliTrace log, we take metadata that was captured as part of the recording that's in your DLLs, and we use that to try and find the symbols. And one of the things that's contained in there is the location of my symbols. So if Visual Studio doesn't go to look in that location, it won't find the symbols. So we need this configured as well. That's kind of the last step. And you can just leave this set on all the time. And it's just one of the paths that we will go and search for symbols. Okay, so that's what I needed to do there. Let me queue up a new build. So typically this would be a CI build, which will run some unit tests, make sure that my code is all valid. As a developer, I want to be confident that the code that I'm going to pass on to whoever takes it next is getting quality code. And let's take a look at our builds. Okay, so there's our build that's queued up. Now, let's take a quick look at Orchestrator. So this is System Center Orchestrator. This is the guy that I'm using to define my environment, capture my builds, and do my deployments. This is that tail end of the automated, configured, repeatable deployment. This is a very, very rich environment. This is an extremely simple sample. I am not an orchestrator guy. I had the orchestrator guys build this out for me. What this does is it's actually monitoring my builds coming out of TFS. And it's going to keep track of the quality of those builds. When a build becomes blessed, Orchestrator will automatically pick it up, deploy it out into my environment. It's then going to set the state of the build to released. You can do all sorts of incredibly magical things with Orchestrator. You can have new VMs spun up. You can have your routers configured. You can have firewalls set. So if you wanted, you could have this spin up a new VM, deploy the new version onto that app, and then configure your environment such that any requests coming in from a subset of IP addresses go to the new version, the rest go to your old version, right? So you can now start to leverage A/B testing as part of your deployment, and it can be automated. So we come back, my build is done, it's all happy, this is good. And I'll take a look at my completed build. There's my completed build. Now, as a developer, I know that as part of my build, I'm running my tests, and everything is magical, and everything is wonderful, and it is good. I'm confident in my code. I'm pushing out reliable stuff. I wrote some new unit tests for the changes I made, all of that. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to come into TFS here, and I'm going to flag this as initial test pass. Now, if I'm working in a large enterprise organization, chances are there's some gates between I'm saying my code is good and ready for deployment, and the rest of the organization actually being willing to deploy it. So maybe my business users want to actually take a little poke, see if this looks like what they asked for. Maybe I've got a QA team that needs to give this a bit more of a thorough thrashing to see that this is actually meeting the quality that they agree to before they're willing to release this into the wild. So my QA team uses the initial test pass as their trigger to pick up this build and test it in their staging environment. Now, as part of Orchestrator, I could have a separate runbook configured that when the staging, the build quality gets set to initial test passed, I can have some approval step in there that QA says, yep, okay, I'm ready to take this, deploy this out into QA automatically. And you can have that all configured so that the deployment is into a very consistent environment that's, again, very repeatable. So, okay, fine. That all happens. My QA looks at it, they test it, they bless it, they say it's good, and they change this to ready for deployment. Let me just save that and do a refresh. Now, my orchestrator, the way that we've got it set up in this demo, is triggering off of that change of state. So as soon as QA says, yep, this is ready for deployment, my orchestrator system is monitoring my TFS builds, and it goes, oh, this build was just set to ready for deployment. Let's push it out. And what we should see, if everything worked correctly, 11:02 up on the clock there, and we've got 11:02 here. So you can see by the change of the state, my application has been redeployed. Let's just make sure that all worked. So I'm going to go back into my application, fire this up. And of course, I've got a brand new deployment out there, right? So we're going to have the jitting occur, brand new application. And this is where I need the Bond girl to distract people. And I apologize to the women in the audience. thank you, Carl. Because it does take a little bit of time for this to spin up. And of course, if you're hosting this in Azure, the servers are much more responsive than my poor little dev box that's running SQL and System Center and Visual Studio and TFS. Okay, so here's my app again. I'm going to click on my customers, Maria. Okay, I obviously didn't fix that very well. How about my reports? And I still have the problem. Okay, so demo failure. Sad. Would you believe me if I said this worked all of the other times that I tried it out? Oh, sure. Yeah, thanks, Richard. Okay, so basically what this does is this picks up things from my builds. It can do it. It's all automatically. This is my configuration as code. This is where I define what my environment needs to look like. This defines what the code gets pushed out. I'm using it in an automated fashion from TFS. So I've got my testers involved here. I've got my operations involved here. I'm using TFS. I'm using Orchestrator. I'm using VS. All in a very automated, very repeatable, albeit not necessarily successful. Oh, you know what? I bet you if I checked in my code, it would work better. Okay. I know. All right. So, tip. When you've made your changes, check the code in. If you take away nothing else from today, he brings candy, and he should know better to check in code. All right, so if I checked in my code, I'm willing to bet my fixes probably would have worked a whole lot better. So that's the cycle, right? That's where we're building tools to really help break down the barriers, make things much more repeatable, make things more actionable, make it all work a whole lot better. So that's the demo part. That's where I like to spend most of my time. So if we come back to this, right, so the ALM integrated tools and workflows, right? We're really working hard to break down the barriers between what ops is doing and what your development team and what your QA team and everybody involved. What are they doing? We want to make that a whole lot easier, right? Because it's all about collaboration, get everybody involved, get everybody working together. Testing in production. So this is sort of what I was talking about at the end, right? With Orchestrator, you could have it spin up a new VM, drop new code onto an isolated server with a select group of users' IP addresses that are hitting that. That's where a lot of companies are going. If you talk about Facebook, you know, think about Twitter. A lot of those guys, they don't have a test or a staging environment. Bing does not have a test or stage environment. They make changes, they push them into production. Small subset of users are actually going to get them. If they've got bugs, they revert that. They point everybody back to the rest of the farm out of their, whatever, 10,000 machines. But they do not use test and stage. It's all testing and production now. This is the way a lot of companies are going. And if the Bing guys can do it, it's not just startup. So non-intrusive diagnostics. System Center is just running, right? It's picking up stuff. It's getting very rich data that I can bring back into Visual Studio. I can use IntelliTrace. I can get actual back to code using the debugger on that very low impact, always on monitoring solution. It's actionable. I can do something with it. I can see the exceptions. I can see the values that were passed in. I saw that ID was passed in. ID 1 was passed in, but the customer that was returned had an ID value of 2. So I can really, really do something about that. And this is all captured in a production environment, right? So this is where you cannot attach a debugger. You don't have access to that. The laws quite often say developers aren't allowed to go there, right? So I need a way to get data back into my development environment that I can actually really use to solve my problems. And then the last step there was using Orchestrator. I've got a very rich, very elaborate tool that I can use to do as much as I need to do as far as the deployment goes. Okay, so this is what we're doing, right? We're really trying our best to enable you guys to move into that DevOps space, right? So DevOps is not a tool that we can provide. DevOps is a movement, it's an approach, it's a methodology. We'll give you guys the tools that you need to be successful there, but it's really about you guys and your organization coming to terms on how you use these tools and resolve your bugs and push stuff out into production. A couple of related sessions that all happened previously. Okay, something's got to get a laugh, right? These are good ones. These are interesting ones. Of course, this is all recorded, right, so you can always go and watch these after the fact. And so here, I did get to my slide, Carl. Again, my Bond girl. If you're interested in participating in the study, please go and see Carl. He's very eager to talk to you. And there's the URL. Unfortunately, this deck came in fairly hot with this particular slide, so I don't know if this slide will be in the deck that you can download. Obviously, it'll be in the recording. So if you're interested and you want to do it online and you're afraid of Carl, just jot down that URL. And we also have, and this slide came in fairly hot too, right? So of course, we just announced TFS Online is no longer in preview. It's now the real deal. Go in there, use it, try it out, right, with your MSDN subscription. Actually, I don't even think you need an MSDN subscription. I think it's free for teams of 5 or less. It's a smoking deal. We use it internally. We've been using it for a long, long time. It's really slick. I love it. So go and check out a bunch of that stuff. Some resources. This is in my deck that was actually submitted, so you can download this. So we've got my blog, which you know is all IntelliTrace kind of stuff. Visual Studio ALM blog. We've got System Center Orchestrator information up there, as well as System Center and ALM talking about the TFS connector. What not, please submit a session evaluation. You know, there was candy, right? There were no kids at my house last night, but I got candy. And the end. Any questions? Yeah.
So with a simple
server,
that
app? Yep. So that symbol server thing, is that for one app or is that for many? Let me see if I can get back. It's for all, so whatever you want. If we take a look at the location where I'm dropping my symbols, you'll see it's dropping them based off of the name of the symbol itself, which is based off of your binary. And if we drill down into one of these that should be reasonably interesting, you can see there's a the very friendly GUID, right? So these are all of the various builds that I've done on this machine, and each one of these matches a separate build. So this is how I have to have the right one sitting there to match my deployed binaries. And some of the one thing that I didn't show you is when we start looking at these build definitions, right, there's this retain indefinitely. When you push something out into production, you want to do that retain indefinitely, right? Because otherwise, depending on how you've configured your builds, right, they'll get scrubbed and they'll get tossed away. So if it's in production, retain it indefinitely. You'll know your symbols are around and you'll be able to reconcile what's going on.
Does that what needs to be able to access that? The TFS server, the system center,
right.
The local machine?
Yep. So what needs to access that path? TFS definitely has to, because that's where it's dropping the bits as part of the build output. And your developers need to be able to access it from VS. System Center doesn't need to know anything about this. This has absolutely nothing to do with your running application. This is all the bits that you've stored and retained. Right. So where can I use System Center and IntelliTrace? System Center is a little bit broader than IntelliTrace in what it can monitor. So they do have some JavaScript monitoring for client. They've got basically anything hosted in IIS as well as Windows services. IntelliTrace doesn't do anything client-side, so there's no JavaScript in IntelliTrace. And right now we don't do Windows services, which is... I saw the wince, right? Oh, man, really? Yeah, really, it's true. Give us some time. Okay, green shirt.
Between the green and blue sides of the circle, for us, since we're an ISV, there's like 500 miles of locks on both ends, so we don't have, TFS is not connected to our customers, and how do you deal with that?
Right. Okay, so I'm an ISV, I build the app, somebody else runs it. Right, I'm not connected. I may not even know who they are, right? So everything that I showed here was using that TFS connector to get the data back into the devs, then I was using Orchestrator to push it out. If you don't have the TFS connector or you're not part of that organization, all of the IntelliTrace files and all of that log information is still dropped to disk. So you could still have your customer run the diagnostics component and then just mail the log back to you. Put it on your 100 gig SkyDrive, right? And it'll just use a little bit of it. And then you can open up, right? And it's up to you to have the symbols that match whatever they have deployed. So as long as you're retaining your symbols for whatever you ship, right? So think of that as deployed. And then you'll still get the magic happening, especially if it was built out of TFS. Yeah.
Establish some type of connectivity between your customer environments and your environment, what does that connectivity need to be in order to have some of this rich experience? Not counting the deployment side of things, but certainly counting the ability to sort of live monitor the exceptions that are occurring and that kind of stuff.
Okay, let me see if I get this one right. So I'm an ISV, I've got a customer. What do I need to enable to have some, from an ISV perspective, some monitoring capabilities into my ISV, and what kind of connection do I need to have available there?
Yeah, so if I, let's say, for the sake of argument, that I can establish a VPN connection or some kind of connection between my customer's data center and my data center or my dev environment, what needs to happen there in order for us to get this rich data inside systems?
Right. So to enable this scenario in disconnected enterprises, how about we phrase it that way? If you've got the TFS in your environment and they've got the System Center in their environment, it would just be the communication channels between the two of those. I've got a fellow here from System Center that can probably answer that a whole lot better. So maybe we'll just take that one right after. And we're kind of out of time. One last question back here in the white shirt.
System Center, the orchestrator, can you use that with deployments to Azure?
Can I use, okay, I'm getting a nod here. There's my orchestrator guy. All right, wonderful. So the question was, can I use orchestrator to push out to Azure? And my System Center guys that are in the room here are saying yes. All right, so I'm out of time. I've got orchestrator guy here. I've got System Center guy here. I'm here. Come on up. Thank you very much.